GM, everybody, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. You know what I call this episode? The life flywheel. This is the life. This is the journey. This is the hero's journey flywheel of Mr. Gammy Chan. You know, been around the block since 2011. You know, I originally met Gammy Chan on the circuit of conferences, and you know, hit it off, met through friends of friends. I'll never forget the meal he cooked us in Lisbon. That was delicious. But you know, Gammy, I've always loved his takes and insights on Twitter, and I saw him talk about, you know, the whole celeb meme coin thing recently. I'm like, I should have Gammy on. It just kind of clicked in my head. Immediately asked him yesterday, and I'm just like, you want to come on? Sure. And it's really funny because like, I've had like so many interviews canceled recently, and I've been like, I've been like scrambling to like find people. And that's for our viewers at home. I'm sorry.
Day's been grinding. Yeah.
I've been sorry for our like, you know, not like always on Wednesday or Thursday. It's been tough the past few weeks, but like this one, I think it makes it all worth it because we really go into Gammy's story. And if you've been around, if you've either been around, if you're new, if you want to like hear what it's like to, you know, have the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, what happens when life smacks you in the face and what it's, you know, what you need to do to like get back up, this is really the episode to listen to.
Dude, 1000%. And I think, you know, this is not one of those episodes where, you know, Capital K gets super analytical and kind of
drills. You don't need a notepad.
You don't need a notepad. You just need to come, you know, do you not need to open your notebook? Just open up your hearts and your mind and you're good to go. This is one of those good ones.
And we'll get right into it. But before we do, make sure to catch up with every episode, to go ahead, subscribe, hit that bell button on YouTube, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like, follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. If you're watching this on Twitter, go ahead, give us a retweet, give us a like, leave us a reply, spread this far and wide. And you can follow me, yours truly, on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You follow me at 0x capital underscore K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Welcome back to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, and I'm here as always with Capital K. And this time around, we have on the man, the myth, the Chan, Gammy Chan. Gammy Chan has, Gammy Chan has just been around, you know, he's been around CT, he's been in crypto for a minute, you know, very famous early Link Bull, known for his renowned cooking and food taste around the world. And always has something unique to share on the timeline and always has great insights. Recently, Gammy, you were going off around the celeb meme coins and like kind of your thoughts around that and a little bit more getting into the deeper picture. And I was like, I should have Gammy Chan on. And then I just reached out. And I'm just like, yo, Gammy Chan, come on. And you're like, word. And now we're here. So Gammy Chan, welcome.
Thank you, Dave. That was a nice intro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, of course. And, you know, before the episode, I had to do my homework. So I felt like a Nardwar a bit. And I'm just like asking people like, yo, like, what do you got on Gammy Chan? And so, first question, Gammy Chan, for those who are like unfamiliar with you, what is your background? How'd you get into crypto? I heard you had a mining rig in college for like a BTC ETH mining rig and it got super hot in your apartment. You know, they were sweating, but you were like, nah, I got to mine this shit. So Gammy Chan, like, what is your origin story? What is your genesis myth?
So I've always been like into tech stuff back in high school. I used to mod Xbox 360s. Like I'd put like Linux on people's Xbox 360s and charge $60 for it. That was like my side job in high school, but I would always go on this one website called overclock.net. It's like a PC modder forum. And I just happened to come across a thread about Bitcoin. And this was 2011. And back then you could still mine. There were people, it was right when they transitioned from like CPUs to GPUs. And I already had like my gaming computer built. I was in college at the time, and electricity was free where I was staying. Like it was included in the rent. So I'm like, I got this powerful GPU. Yeah. I got this powerful GPU. I got free electricity. The only thing I'm losing here is sweating my ass off when I sleep at night, cause my room is like 90 degrees from running my computer all the time. But I'm like, I don't know. This seems risk free. I just run my computer and I get money.
How much Bitcoin did you mine in those days?
Yeah, let me just preface this by saying I did unfortunately sell all of them. Because whenever I tell people this, they're like, oh, you must be a billionaire, right? Like you started mining in 2011. But I was just on that one GPU, I was mining like 3 or 4 a day. And then I added a second GPU. I actually, so this was when blocks were a full 50 BTC.
Uh-huh.
I actually mined my own block. Like, so I was.
Oh, you got one.
Yeah, oh, wow. I was part of a pool. I was in Slush's pool. But I was one of the miners that like found a block. So it sucked. Like I was like, fuck, I should have been solo mining, you know? Like I would actually have gotten the whole block.
Yeah, the whole nut.
But I had to share my block of 50 with people. But like I said, I was making like 4 a day on the single GPU, and then I added another GPU later. But you know, I'm a broke ass college kid. I had like $1,000. So I literally like everything I mined, I just sold right away to like pay for food and gas and like books and stuff. So like I never held any of that. I just like,
yeah. And at the time, what was the price of Bitcoin? It must've been like,
When I started, it was $1. And then, it peaked at like 32 that first cycle. And then,
oh, wow. So this is like your fifth
That's
cycle.
Good. Yeah. This is the God, this is Satoshi's vision, right? This is like e-cash, right? You really used it as money to buy for food. That was Satoshi's vision.
Yeah. This is Satoshi's vision. You took the word out of my mouth.
I actually have this email that I sent to my dad. It was like April 2011 or whatever, and I like linked him the white paper, and I was like, man, you got to check this thing out. Like, you can be your own bank. Like, I was one of the fundamental shills. And everybody back then, of course, was just like, okay, dude, whatever you say. So back to what we were saying about like what it was at when I started, it was like $1. Then it went up to like 32. And then I think it crashed all the way down to like $2 or $3. But I sold everything I had at like 20. So locally, like I got out at a good point. The issue was obviously like not buying back it too. But I act like literally because my coworkers would not shut up making fun of me, like my summer job that I worked in college. Like anytime I'd bring up Bitcoin, they would just laugh their asses off at me. And they were like, this can't be real. They're like, no way. You're just like getting free money, like running your computer. So I was like, yeah, you want to like, you sure it's not real? I logged in like on the work computer and I sold it and I withdrew it to my bank. And I was like, look, like there's cash in my bank. Like I sold like 100 BTC at like $20 just to like prove Gangsta. A point to them. Obviously regret that one, but.
Was it like Mt. Gox back then? Was it OTC? Like how did people sell their Bitcoin?
Yeah, that Mt. Gox was around at that time, but the only options there was like, you couldn't use PayPal yet. It was like, you had to do like a money order, or there was this like PayPal competitor called Dwolla. Have you ever heard of Dwolla?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Actually. Yeah. I wasn't even sure for a second if I was remembering the name right. Yeah. You had to like deposit it. You could deposit and withdraw through Dwolla or like literally like physically mailing them a money order. It was like, it was pretty stupid, but I did set up a Dwolla account. So I was able to like electronically withdraw.
Did you ever do like Linden Bucks from Second Life or no?
No, I was never into any of that
stuff. I thought that was the most interesting way. It was just the Linden Bucks.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like people would like buy and sell Linden Bucks for Bitcoin. But anyways, so you were mining, You were there for like the first run up to, you know, a whopping $32. So I cashed down 99% to $2. And I can't imagine how over it felt in that moment. It's like, wow, like this must be a scam. Like it's so over. What was it like during that first bear market?
So yeah, those first couple cycles, I guess I was one of those stereotypical people that would like leave during the bear and then come back. Cause it was like, well, part of it was also when I would go home for the summer, like I would leave college and go home. But like electricity wasn't free anymore, you know, I'd be at my parents' house. So I would stop mining because like I didn't want to run up the electricity bill on my parents and also like heat up the house. I figured that would piss them off. So like I would stop mining in the summer and then I would only mine when I would go back to college. And then also when it was like so worthless, it wasn't like I wouldn't even mind because it just wasn't worth like heating up my room so much and making me uncomfortable every day. So it was really like, yeah, I was one of those guys that I would leave in the bear and then I'd come back in the bull to mine again when it was actually like worth it. And the second cycle, what screwed me on that was when the ASIC miners started showing up. And I actually have one sitting on my desk right here. The Butterfly Labs, it was called the Jalapeno. It was like their little mini one that they made. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I bought like the Jalapeno and I bought a couple of like the larger ones. But they were supposed to be, the first ASIC miners to launch. And I only had like $5,000 to my name at the time. Uh-huh. And I put all $5,000 into buying those ASIC miners. And they wound up delivering like, I think it was like 6 to 8 months late. And when I bought the miners, I think Bitcoin was like $30. And by the time they arrived, it was already like 400 or 500. And that cycle, it peaked at like 1200. And also there was another company that delivered the ASIC miners earlier. So by the time I got mine, not only was the price so much higher, but the difficulty had increased too. So I only wound up mining. I mean, it still wound up being like slightly profitable. I think I mined like 7 or 8 Bitcoin at like, and then sold them at like 1200. So like I got my $5,000 back and then like a couple extra thousand, but like, it really screwed me because if I just, you know, if I just put that 5,000 in at $30,
I bought it. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have done way better than mining. So after that, like that was the last I ever mined Bitcoin. I did get into mining Litecoin and Ethereum later because that you could do with GPUs. And I just enjoy like building a bunch of extra computers and doing all that. So that's
you're
like
a man with the hands.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened after that, Gammy? Like after you sold and then you kind of top tick, you know, beautifully, you sold the Pico top. Like what was the next phase?
It kind of just repeated.
Oh, so you left? You left in the bear?
Yeah, so like the first two cycles were like mine during the bull. Leave during the bear. And then like, and I didn't really have any money to like buy the bottom with either. So my situation didn't really change until I graduated college. And then got a job and like actually had some income and some money saved up. So really like the first cycle that I was able to like really participate in was 2016, 2017. Unfortunately,
it's our class, Dave.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like, that's 2016 is when I came back and like stayed back 100% and never left again. But before
third time's the charm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so like Ethereum launched in like the bear when I wasn't looking at it. So I missed Ethereum for like the whole first year. So like when the DAO hack happened and everything, like I wasn't even watching it then. I was like not a part of any of that. But then I came back like early 2016. I had found some like LTC wallets I had from like mining LTC. And I was like, whoa, this is like worth something again. and I sold off the like LTC I had lying around for like a few thousand dollars. And that's what my like starting bankroll for the 2016 and the 2017 run was. But then, where it really all changed, like I said, it was a combination of factors. A huge part was the fact that like I had a job and actually had money coming in.
You hear that, guys? He had a job. He had an income.
Jobs are good. Jobs are good.
A little side note on that. I do think it's really important because your trading changes a lot when you need it to be your income. Like you can't just buy something and set it aside and be like, whatever, if it goes to zero, it's okay. I still got a paycheck coming in. Now you're like, if this goes to zero, I'm like, I'm homeless. it changes the dynamic a lot. So I do think until you get to a point where like you're really comfortable, it's like, it's a good idea to have a job. But Chainlink was the first time I was able to actually like put money into something. And when I bought that Chainlink, I said, I'm not like, it's like an all or nothing for me. I'm not touching it. Wow. I'm just holding it. The thing that enabled me to do that was the fact that I had income. Cause I was like I was saying, how I sent that email to my dad, like back in the, like when I was found Bitcoin, like I did actually like see the vision a little bit and like was excited about it, but I could never, I got talked out of holding just because everybody would laugh at me. Yeah.
FUD.
And yeah, I did. Gotta be honest, like the FUD did get to me, just like everybody just looking at me like I was stupid every time I bring it up. And then secondly, like I couldn't even really hold it if I wanted to, like I just needed the money. But Chainlink was the first one where I could just set it aside, not touch it, and be like, I got my paycheck. If it goes to zero, whatever, like that sucks, but I'll be fine. And that was like, that was what changed it all for me.
So how did you first discover Chainlink and what stuck out about it?
So I was an old 4chaner. I started going on 4chan back in like 2006. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And whenever I would
years ago.
Oh my God.
Is that when it first came out? No?
No. It came out like 2004, 2005 or something.
Okay.
But yeah, I would frequent Biz occasionally, like, you know, when I would come back and during the bulls and like, what's Biz talking about? But there was this one poster, I think they just called her like anime girl poster, because it was always like an anime picture in like the OP. Uh-huh. And she just kept posting links to like the pre-sale for like Chainlink ICOs, because they had the pre-sale and then there was like the public ICO. But the pre-sale, you needed to like, there was like a minimum. So there was like brackets to it. There was like 100 ETH minimum on the pre-sale or something like that. So people were like,
how much was ETH was back then?
This was like September 2007, I guess. I don't even remember what it was.
2017?
2017, yeah, not 2007. I don't even remember off the top of my head.
It's been a couple hundred bucks still.
Yeah, I think it was maybe like four or 500 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I mean, 100 ETH even then was like a lot for like a single person. People were like splitting up these pre-sale allocation links.
Syndicating.
Syndicating. Yeah, sure.
4chan is syndicating.
4chan syndicate. Anime girl syndicate.
Yeah.
It's come to fruition now. But yeah, continue.
I just kept seeing like this damn cube keeps showing up. And I'm like, all right, I'll look into this thing. And I went to their site and I looked at first off on the site, I saw Swift mentioned. Because before Chainlink even existed, they had won a competition with Swift at their Cybos competition in 2016. So they got like all these privileges and like access to people at Swift. So they already had like Swift connections back in as early as 2016. So they had the Swift logo on the site. And then I went and I read the white paper. And one thing that caught my eye, So the names on the white paper, it was just Sergey, Steve, and Ari. And Ari was Ari. The ex, yeah, Ari Jules. He was the ex, like, chief scientific director at, like, the RSA. It's like the Cryptography Institute. Uh-huh. Sorry if I messed up his title. I think it was something like that. He was, like, the director of, like, science at RSA. He's a legit guy, and he's been cited in so many cryptography papers. And I was like, those two things are what caught my eye right away. Swift and the fact that Ari was working with him. I'm like, this guy's actually like a legit cryptographer. He's been around like before Bitcoin even existed. So yeah, that caught my eye. And then, after reading the white paper, took maybe like another week for it to like settle in and realize like, okay, what they're making actually has like a huge application. Back before Ethereum even existed, when it was just Bitcoin, I was like, oh, this is really cool. You can like be your own bank, and this is awesome. And you know, it like eliminates all the middlemen, but like, that's kind of it, right? You can just send money from A to B. and that's great. And I think the store of value use case like that, the whole digital gold thing, like that has a tremendous amount of value, but I always wanted to like do more with it. So when I found Ethereum, I was like, oh shit, like we can actually like, now we have this like programmable money that we can now start actually doing things with and not just sending it from A to B. But the problem was like, it still can't affect the real world. Like, you're like, okay, that's fine if you can program money on Ethereum, but if you can't ever like affect anything in the real world, it's not really useful now, is it? So when I found Chainlink, I was like, okay, this is the thing. Like, this is what the brings it to the real world. Yeah. The
missing right. link. Yeah, there we go.
And it just, yeah, it was just like,
it just clicked.
Man, it just felt so obvious. And man, I don't think I've ever had so much conviction in like anything in my life. Ever.
Wow.
And then where do the Synchocrates come in with like the travels and the sevens and the cubes and the frogs?
Happening? So the Chainlink guys, they have this thing with sevens. I won't say where it came from because that's a little bit of like hidden lore, if you know, kind of thing. But basically, suffice it to say, sevens are like an important thing for us. So they like show up everywhere. But also like Pepe, he really started on 4chan. That was 4chan's meme.
Mm-hmm.
And he really like Chainlink always had the most memes. Like if you would go on Biz, like half the posts would be about Chainlink and all the like funniest memes would be Chainlink. And there was a very like tight association with Pepe. And People would just post. I don't know if you ever see that thing with like Keck about like the mm-hmm. the Egyptian hieroglyphics.
I got something for you. One sec.
Okay.
Oh man. Oh shit. We got some props. We're bringing in some props.
You mean this guy?
Yes, that one with the so you see it looks like someone sitting at a computer, right? Like a CRT monitor.
And he's doing little meme magic.
Yeah, and behind it it looks like a DNA, like a double helix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the word meme, where that comes from is memory gene. So it's like DNA but for memories, because like it's how people like pass on their memories the same way they pass on their like biological genes. They pass on their memories through memes. So people like refer to that as being like the meme hieroglyphic, whatever.
This has been by my side since 2017.
Yeah. So as you can see, like people get pretty esoteric with it. So there was a lot of people just like posting their like synchronicities, but I would start seeing, there would be like hexagons everywhere, sevens everywhere. But some of the unexplainable stuff that happened to me was like, I was in this group chat. It was just like 10 of us, all Link guys. And I was visiting some of my friends for the weekend. It was like my friend's wedding. And we were talking during lunch and we were talking about like this article I read on like meme magic. And they mentioned, they actually mentioned Shia LaBeouf in it, strangely. Do you know, did you ever see that like raid that 4chan did on Shia LaBeouf?
Oh yeah, what's it called? The He Will Not Divide Us?
Yeah, I think that, yeah.
Oh, was it the Capture the Flag thing?
Well, it was like, I don't remember what they called it, but it was, Shia LaBeouf was going around doing like anti-Trump videos, and he would set up like webcams. And 4chan, because they just love to do things for the lulz, would find out wherever his webcam was, and they would put a MAGA hat like on the, like in the frame. And he was starting to get pissed because like, it's just, wherever he would go, they would find out. And eventually he just set up a webcam like in the woods.
Yeah.
And
in like the woods of Finland or something.
Yeah, like all you can see are like trees behind it. And he's like, screw you guys, you're never going to find this one. Well, turns out you could see a little bit of the night sky, and they were able to like see constellations in the sky. And also a plane flew by at some point during the live stream, and they were able to get the tail number off of the plane. And also he had like posted on Instagram that he was like in some area recently or whatever, and they put that together. Eventually some guy went and drove around and was like honking the horn on his car, and they were doing like hot, cold, like you're getting closer, you're getting farther kind of thing with the honk, because they would hear it on the webcam.
Oh my God.
And they found it and they put the hat on.
the power of collective intelligence.
Yeah, this is kind of a long setup for like where the synchronicity happened. But I was telling this to my friends, and I was like, you know what? My like Chainlink buddies would really like this story. So I opened up the chat to like message them that we were just talking about it. And they are talking about the same thing with Shia LaBeouf in the chat. And it happened like 2 years before this. There was like nothing, it wasn't like it was like recent or anything that would have like brought it up again. They just happened to also be talking about it. I hadn't mentioned it in the chat like before that or whatever. It was just like, oh, I should like go and tell them. So then when that happened, I like explained that to them, like, oh, that's really weird. I was just talking about that. And then I told them about this like meme magic article that I was reading, and also how it mentioned this, there's this vinyl record from like 1973 that was called Pepe, and it has a picture of a frog on it. And I mentioned that in the chat too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask, like, what was this article? Like,
I don't know. I was just like some blog on like meme magic where it had a collection of like different like meme history things. Maybe I can find it after this and link it to you, but I don't remember the title off the top.
Yeah, please. Cause I remember I wrote something like this, like way, like,
oh no, ago. If it was that, no,
no, the lore's too deep if that happens.
I wrote when I was at Everpedia, I like wrote a Everpedia page about exactly this. I don't know if it's probably, it wasn't an article. It's more like a, you know, it's an Everpedia page. So it's like a wiki page. It might be something else, but like if it was the Everpedia article, that would be like another crazy synchronicity.
No, I'm kind of scared to look it up because that's going to blow my mind if it is.
Can you look up? We'll do it after the interview.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I mentioned the Pepe like vinyl part of it too. And the one guy in the chat who it was like, he lives in France, so he's like on the other side of the world from me. He's like, oh, you mean this record that I just bought 5 minutes ago? And then he sends a picture of it to the chat, like with the receipt, like time stamped. And I'm like, all right, I'm logging off the internet for the day. But like, yeah, stuff like that just happens to me a lot. And it would always be like, I would go and like tell the chat, I'd be like, yeah, the synchronicities are picking up. Like, I think it's going to pump soon. And we would like mark it on the chart too. And they would get like a 200% pump like the next month or two after. Like you can go back and look at my tweets. I had a tweet from July 2021, like the Pico bottom. Mm-hmm. I called an Uber. We were going to this guy's house for a barbecue. I had never been to his house before. And I took an Uber there. The guy pulls up and his license plate is like LNK77 something. And I was like, oh shit, it's Link. And I get in the Uber And the song that's playing on the radio, he has like, it was one of those where he has like the digital center console display. So it has like the title of the song. The song was called Link Up. And I was like, no way, like Link's going up. I arrived at this. Yeah, the song was literally just called Link Up. And this was after me like making a comment about his like license plate saying Link. And then we arrive at the cookout. And this guy has little like frog statues, just like 20 of them, like all over his backyard. And I was like, okay, I got to tweet about this. And I tweeted like, yeah, I'm like having like weird Link stuff happen to me. Like the bottom's got to be close. And it was like, that was literally the day it bottomed. The day after that, I think, was like when we got that big like short squeeze up. Remember that back in 2021 where like,
yeah.
Yeah, Bitcoin squeezed like $10,000 in like an instant. But yeah, that was like, if you put that tweet on the Link chart, it was like the Pico bottom in July 2021.
You must just feel like, I've had enough of this. Like, this is too weird.
Yeah, I've had like, these are just some of the larger ones, but
I've had people smaller actually. Too.
Yeah, hey, Gammy, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please.
I was just going to say, I've had people be like, can you stop telling me these? Like, they're weirding me out. Like, I need you to stop sharing this with me.
I'm like, I want to hear more of it. I love this shit.
It's like the universe is conspiring to push you towards something. It's crazy.
No, the universe is conspiring in your favor.
Do you want one more? I got one more.
Yeah, let's do one more. Yeah, yeah. Let's do one more.
And this was another one that I tweeted. I always try, like, whenever something happens, I always try and, like, tell my friends or, like, tweet about it or something. So that way, like, after the fact, we can go back and be like, yeah, it, like, it ripped after this. Because it always happens to pump. But I was driving to see a friend, and there was, like, there was a tractor trailer that went by. And it was like from the like Swift trucking company. And you know how like their Chainlink Swift, like they have all those connections. I'm like, all right, whatever. But then there was like another logo on the back that was like a blue cube. There was like a blue cube vinyl like pasted on the back of the truck. And I was like, okay, that's a little weird. And then right after that, I drove over a creek that was called Swift Creek. And I was like, all right, it's starting to add up. And then like a mile further down the highway, I come around a bend. It's like in the woods. This is like North Carolina or something, in the woods in North Carolina. And I come around a bend, and there's a giant blue bull staring back at me, like a chain link blue colored bull, a statue of a giant bull. And you know Paul Bunyan, like the kid's, I don't know, what is that, a kid's story or whatever?
Yeah,
Paul
yeah.
Bunyan and like his big blue bull. There's like, I guess it's like an attraction in North Carolina where there's this giant blue bull statue. But I was like, okay, like that's got to be bullish, right? It's like,
it's a fucking bull.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same, like I was saying, it's like the chain link blue, like the same blue as the color of the logo. And then I get to my friend's house. I'm telling him all this stuff. And he's, we decided to like run to the gas station and get a drink, like the local Sheets or whatever. And we pull in. He just got this new car and it had like the auto parallel park feature. So he's like, hey, check this out. And it like reversed automatically into the parking spot. So we were like, we were backed into the parking spot looking out. This dump truck pulls up in front of us. And I tweeted a picture of this dump truck. Chainlink blue, the whole truck is just blue. And in big letters, all it says on the side of the truck is just Link. And the truck just stops right in front of us. Like I said, we were like parked facing out. So we were like looking out. It just stopped right in front of us. And the driver just sat there. He like didn't get out or anything. He just like stopped for like a solid 30 seconds and then just kept driving. And I look at my friend and I was like, what was that? Why did he just stop there? But yeah, just like big, huge letters. Yeah, I tweeted a picture of this truck. Just huge white letters on the side of this chain link blue truck, and it just said Link. And that was right when Link bottomed. You know how it did that like little deviation of the range at the where it like broke down below $5? Mm-hmm. This was right when it like reclaimed $5 and it ran from like 5 to 15. That like when all this was happening to me was like right at like $5, like days before it started that run.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. That's just... Okay. Let's go all the way back there. Wait, when you first built... When was your first purchase of Link, and how did you buy that Link? Did you get on Ether Delta, or did you do the 4chan syndicate? Or did you add to the position? Or, like, I feel like all those universal signals must have did something to you.
It was Ether Delta right when it launched. Nice. I was like, yeah, that was the only way you could get it. Back then, Ether Delta was, that was like, I kind of missed that as much as it sucked, but it was free money because nobody ever wanted to mess with Ether Delta. Was such a pain in the ass. So it was like a guaranteed like 2 or 3x every time to just buy on Ether Delta, sell when it gets a Binance listing. It's just free money.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so for Ether Delta, I remember the hack was like in the URL before they kind of put the ticker in there, you could paste the smart contract address and get the trading pair.
Yeah. Right?
And that was the hack that kind of no one knew beforehand. And then but then obviously the edge got diminished. But I remember Ether Delta because I fat fingered one decimal place and I ended up purchasing like 10x on, I think, District 0x or some other shit.
See, I was always afraid I would do that. That's why I never used Ether Delta.
Oh, dude, it rocked. In my mind, I was like, how can you not match my order? You know, like, why did you make me buy 10x above the market? Oh, yeah, that was my one memory with Ether Delta.
I never used Ether Delta, but like my first interaction with a smart contract was buying EOS from the contract when that ICO was happening and trying to sell it for an ARB on an exchange.
You mentioning District 0x reminded me of ZRX, because I thought you said like ZRX at first. I have a bit of a horror story about that. Horror story. I got a lot of those. We all have our regrets in crypto, don't we?
Yeah.
Makes us numb over time. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead. What is this horror story?
So this is the story of how I missed out on like 8 figures because of a Windows update. I got into the ZRX ICO, and how that worked was it was a 2-day thing. The first day they reserved, you could buy $2,000 of it the first day, and you had like 24 hours to show up. It was like a whitelisted thing. And then the second day you could buy up to $6,000 of it. And it was like a first come, first serve. Whenever it ran out type deal. Mm-hmm. I bought my allocation on the first day, but then the second day I had to go to work and it launched like while I was at work. And I wanted to buy the full 6K allocation. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I set up like a TeamViewer, like a remote access on my computer. And I was like, I'll log in from work. I had the wallet all set up. Like I loaded it up with the 6K and I had it open up like to the page that you had to purchase. And I was like, all right, all I have to do is log in from work and like click buy and I'm done. I go to log in from work. It's like loading, fail to connect, timeout. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And it was like, I worked like half an hour away from my home. I'm like, I can't even, like, by the time I get home, it's going to be sold out. So I finished my work day. I get home. I look at my computer. My computer had restarted because it applied a Windows update and like Windows automatically restarted.
No.
Yeah.
Protecting you.
Right. And, protecting and investors here.
One of the things that screwed up about it is I was mining on that computer. And one of the reasons it hadn't restarted to apply the update was because I had been mining for like weeks. So the computer's been like loaded and it won't restart if you're like actively doing things on the computer. Mm-hmm. It only restarts like if it's like idling. But I had thought I was doing the right. I like shut off all the miners because like sometimes they would crash and freeze the computer. So I was like, I don't want to leave those running and like potentially have an issue. So I turned them off. So the computer was sitting there idling. And so then Windows and all their intelligence was like, oh, he's not using the computer. Now's a good time to reboot.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Well anyway, this ICO, it 10x'd. And that money that I made on ZRX is what I rolled into Chainlink. I put all my profits from ZRX into Chainlink, but I would have had like an extra 60K to put into Chainlink at 10 cents.
Yeah.
And then my Chainlink, I held that all the way to $50. I mean, you know, who knows what I would have done with the extra like 60K that I would have bought, but like, obviously that's like, that's regret math right there.
Wait, so I remember when I saw Chainlink
dig in there.
I saw Chainlink at 17 cents on Ether Delta, and I remember it very clearly. I don't know what the 17 number, I guess again 7, was just stuck in my mind. I was just like, man, this blockchain thing touching the real world, now that's too difficult to do. So I just faded it completely.
Well, in your defense, it still hasn't really happened. Like, it is a difficult thing. Like, we still have a lot of progress to make in that space. I'm kind of like, you know that joke about the Linux guys, how they're like, oh, this is the year of the Linux desktop, and like, it's always Windows is dominant.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that for us too. Like, this is the year blockchain's going to go mainstream.
Yeah. Well, again, dude, you know your Windows update, just to put a price tag on it, it costed 20 mil, you know, casually.
Don't do that to him. That's cruel.
I'm sorry. That's true. That's you know, Pico top prices. So adjusted for today's prices, this is about like, you know, 8 mil.
So, whatever. That's fine. Pocket change.
I mean, I don't think you can be in crypto without one of these, you know, grand misses or regrets. Like, it's just all part of paying your dues. Like, we've all been through this. We've all fumbled these massive opportunities. So it's all par with the course. And what matters is you have one time that you make it. And all it takes is one time, literally.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
One time, and then you're able to manage your risk after that. You're golden. You're coasting.
I agree with that. With like, everybody has their regrets, and like, you know, we have our sayings, like you gotta pay your tuition.
These lessons are priceless.
I do feel, I actually, in a way, like, I'm kind of grateful that I had my early regrets with Bitcoin. Cause like I said, I just sold all that instantly. And that obviously was a big regret for me, even back in 2016, 2017, when it wasn't worth as much. But I do really think because I had that regret, it helped me diamond hand my Link. Cause I was like, I was like, I know the pain of selling early. I was like, I believed in Bitcoin, but yet I sold it early anyway. I got FUDded out. I was like, I'm not going to let this happen to me with Chainlink. And that's the silver lining of it. Cause I don't think you have to be a little bit fucked up to hold something 500x. Like, you have to have some kind of fire burning in you. Like regret can do that. That's one thing that can help that. But like, you don't do that for just normal reasons. So yeah, I think my regret really helped me with that. Now, I later then learned the opposite end of that lesson, which was holding too long. And I got caught in the May 2021 crash pretty bad. So now I've been cut both ways. So now I'm a fully balanced person. Now I have both sides of regret.
What did you hold all the way? I remember that drop because I actually I graduated from my MBA on that day, and I remember somebody asked me like, "What was the price of ETH on the day of my graduation?" And I was like, "Oh, it's 3,333." And I screamed that very loudly. And literally, proceedingly the next day or so, it just nuked, and then for the next month, it just nuked 65%. And I was like, "Yeah,
no, it's over."
Yeah. So what was your thing that you held on for too long, Gami?
Was it Link? It was
Link. Cause like I was saying, I helped Link all the way up to like the top at 53.
From 10 cents to 50 bucks.
From 10 cents to 53. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, what I did. So like I was 100%. I took everything I had and put it in Link. I was 100% allocated to Link for years. And then what happened was Aave showed up. And I was like, okay, I can stay 100% allocated to Link. I'll just borrow some USDC, and like the other stuff I want to buy, I'll just buy like borrowed against my Link. And that worked really well for a long time. And I traded up, like, eventually this, like the stuff that I traded up with my borrowed money wound up becoming as big as my like Link stack.
Oh shit.
So like that went really well. And I was really comfortable, and I got to a position where I was like, all right, like I was only levered up like 1.5x. Like it wasn't crazy. Cause like my health factor on Abe was good. And I was like, I wasn't too concerned about it. I knew like, you know, I've been around for a long time. I know crypto has like a lot of volatility. I knew like 10%, 15% drops like are not uncommon. But I was like, I had such a buffer built up. Cause like I said, like I traded up that stack with the borrowed money to like mm-hmm. be worth so much more than I actually borrowed. So I was like, it doesn't even like, even if it falls like 20%, I'm fine. Like whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of had basically like a mental trailing stop loss. I couldn't actually like physically apply a trailing stop loss. Part of the issue was with the money in Aave, I couldn't set, like if the Link was just sitting on Coinbase, I could like have resting stops, but on Aave, you can't do that. And that's one of the things that screwed me. Yeah. That's your stop. Yeah. Oh my God. But yeah, so that was part of the issue, but I was like, whatever. I'm like, I have such a buffer built up. Like I'm going to let it ride. And I'm not going to let it fall more than like 20%. If it falls more than 20%, I cash out. And like that, I was willing to like lose that much of what I had, but it was like any more than that I need to like keep. And, then it was what, like May 18th and Link crashed. Yeah. When I went to bed, Link was like $40 and I woke up to it at $20. So a 50% crash while I was sleeping. And like I said, I was 1.5 times leverage. So it was actually more like a 75% to an 80% crash for me. So I lost it almost all while I was sleeping, like overnight. I was so comfortable because like I said, I had such a buffer built up. I was like, oh, I could take a 20% haircut, no problem. And like,
but you couldn't imagine still a 50% haircut.
Yeah, it just, I did not imagine at all that overnight Link would fall 50%. Like, I mean, I've seen a lot of volatility. Like, I mean, obviously I was around for the COVID stuff, mm-hmm. but like that had a catalyst at least. Like, I didn't expect to go to bed on a night that like, right. Yeah, it had like started pulling back, but like there wasn't any, like, I don't know. Nobody expects a 50% wick. but yeah, that's what we got.
That's so gnarly.
I'm getting flashbacks to like my experience that time. And I had the same thing, but I just had like with ETH, I had like a bunch of ETH and like same thing. It just wicked down. And like, I remember like I lost like a good chunk of it. And at the same time I had to like sell more taxes. I'm just like, wow, it's like so over. I never forget that. I'm just like, no. Oh my God. You just like threw me back to that.
Another thing that's messed up about it is like I was in the process of cashing out, like planning my cash out. Like I had the week before it crashed. You good, Dave?
A few moments later.
Sorry about that. Gammy, sorry. What you were saying? You were planning your
setting
cash
it up.
Out.
You're setting
yeah,
it up.
Cash out. I was saying another thing that like makes that time extra difficult for me was I was actually in the process of like planning my cash. Like I was aware like it's time to leave soon. Like I had. Just like the week before it crashed, I had calls with two different accountants. Like I was trying to like tax, like minimize my cash out, like get some advice on like, how do I not have like the world's largest tax bill on this? And also my grandfather passed away like right before, like the week before the crash. And I put everything on hold, like those like appointments with the accountants. And I just like stopped everything. And I went home for the funeral and all that. And man, it was just like such an unfortunate, like it was like obviously it's my fault that I left the opening for that to happen. Like you should never let this be even possible, but it was also like a conspiring of events. Like,
right.
It just feels like everything came together to screw me in the, like, there was just this little path that of things that had to happen to come together to screw me. And like, that's what happened. But I mean, that's kind of how the market works, right? Is like, yeah. if you leave that path open, like it finds its way to it.
And this is not the first story I've heard before of personal happenings and events, kind of affecting what happens in your portfolio. I had friends with like breakups, or I had friends like with you with, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. And, you know, like life happens, but the problem is life happens, but the market doesn't stop for life. The market's just this objective, arbitrary thing.
Has its own life.
It has its own life, and it's going forward. And it's just unfortunate, because we do, as human beings, we do need to take the time to take care of ourselves mentally, and we can't always be there. But like the same time, you know, the market's still moving. It just sucks that this is the way it is. 24/7 markets, you know, this is just the way it is. It's not like the stock market. Oh, it's closed on the weekend. Like, oh, it's closed on the holiday. I can like take this time to like go and rest. And but like, no, it's like 24/7. So
not only is it 24/7, it's highly volatile on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tricky, because I feel like a bit of advice for that. Like, if you have life shit going on, like close out your positions, but 100%. Also that's not always really possible. Like for me in that case, like, so my link, that was obviously, I was in the long-term tax bracket. So when I sell, like I trigger that tax event
gains.
And then, and then if I buy back, now I'm in the short-term tax bracket. So it's like tax disadvantageous for me to sell, unless it's like the time where I'm like selling to get, like, I just want to hold it until it's time for me to cash out. And then I walk away, but it's like, I don't want to trade that. So I didn't want to be like, oh, I've got this stuff going on and I can't watch the market. I should sell all my link. Cause then I trigger a massive tax bill. And also there's not too many great ways to hedge, especially for like US citizens that don't have good access to options. Mm-hmm. Like I'm really excited to get some options on the like Bitcoin ETF, because I think that's going to be an awesome way to hedge.
Those blocks, like, baby. Yeah, that's so rough, man. Please go. Yeah. Keep going. Like, how did you come out? Like, you know, cannot end the story here. There must be like a comeback. Rise again.
Like, did you ride Ohm season? Were you in the AVAX rush? What happened?
Well, That was the worst month of my life, probably. Combination of losing like one of the most important people in my life and then losing almost all my money. It's just
I'm getting chills, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was really? Like those two things happened within 1 week of each other. And then like, yeah, it was a rough time that summer. But I held through. Link recovered back up. Unfortunately, Link didn't go on as strong of a run on that second leg as a lot of other stuff did. So I didn't make it all back. But I am thankful that on that second leg, I cashed out between like December 2021 and like January 2022. Bro, so I sold. And then, and then I became like a pretty vocal bull. I think I got like a good, like a lot of my attention that I got came from like, or did I say bull? I meant bear.
Yeah, bear.
I'm like, by default, I'm always a bull, but like a rare time, like high time frame, like multi-year, mm-hmm. I'm always a bull. A
blue bull, crypto. Big one.
Yeah.
South
yeah.
Carolina big bull.
But like, yeah, I flipped bear there, and that was that, like, I guess that was my comeback, because it felt really good after getting screwed so hard to like sell the top. And actually, like, I full stack put like all my Link into Aave, borrowed Link against it, sold all the borrowed Link. So I was like net neutral.
Oh, okay.
And then I bought back at like $6 or $7. So like I stayed hedged the entire way down, like if like Luna collapse, I avoided all that and everything. Like, so that was like, that felt great for me to be like,
damn, you're in the trenches here.
Like if I would have fucked it up twice, I would have hated myself, man. Like yeah, after getting crushed and like knowing how bad that feels, like that helped me cash out on the second leg up.
Again,
that was a 6 month gap. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just like, I need to protect what I have left is like what it felt like.
Oh, dude, that's so awesome, because like your story, literally the worst month of your life, as you said, it was like, you know, 6 months right before, you know, the December, January cash out. So that just that 6 month span, it must have been such a trek up the mountain. And then once you actually sold at the top of the mountain, like the euphoria to be able to buy back literally at 50% like drawdown. Oh, man, I can't imagine. I'm so happy that happened for you.
Yeah, thank you. Unfortunately, that wasn't a total win. I had a lot of small cuts too. I guess that's like
normal.
Yeah, that's a bit of advice.
Yeah, I have to say, like, your story is a very real story that I'm sure a ton of people have gone through in crypto on CT, but we don't really hear it on the timeline because it's not, you know, in, it's not really like the proper engagement bait, but like these like war stories. And I think like the overarching theme here is, even when you were down, even when you were down in like the lowest of the pits, you took what you like needed to learn and you fought your way back up. You fought your way back up. You got up, you used what you learned, and you know what? You made it back. You made it back. Maybe some small cuts here and there, but like there's this trajectory up, and the trajectory up is never just a straight line. You're going to have your ups, you're going to have your downs, you're going to have your, you know, peaks, and then you're going to have your troughs. So, you know, I just have to say, like, this is a, you know, thank you for sharing this. This is a very real story for, like, you know, either people have gone through, or like if people are new and they're hearing this right now, they can learn from this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Yeah. I think it's important to like at least learn something when you get steamrolled, you know. Yeah. And like some of the worst trades that like upset me the most, I guess, are the ones where like, cause like sometimes you have a good thesis and you execute it well and like the market just moves against you, and sometimes there's not a lesson.
There isn't a lesson.
Yeah, and like
mayhem,
like,
for those, mayhem.
Like, those are the frustrating ones, I feel like. Like, at least when I can be like, oh, you know what? I should have done this. Like, I'm going to do that better next time. Like, at least I can walk away with that. But sometimes when it's just like, oh, the market just moved against me.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, there just isn't any God. Sometimes it's just like,
yeah. We're godless.
Yeah, it's just like,
just, the market is just godless.
Well, it's like, I was just going to say, it reminds me of that the Soros quote about how he shorted global financial crisis in 2008, but he sized up too large, and he was like, he was a little too early on it as well. So like the local volatility, it wound up like going up a little bit before it went down. So like his thesis was right. He sized up on it too much too soon. And then he wound up having to like cut some of the position at a loss because it moved against him. And then ultimately he was right, but he wound up making less money than if he just like sized it smaller and was able to hold through that volatility. So like sizing is a really important thing because sometimes
this reminds me of Big Short.
Oh yeah. Like what, how long did it take then? Like it was like a year.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can, and like, actually I feel like a lot of good trades work like that where like you go underwater at first.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, a lot of times it does like, it moves against you first. And if like your thesis is right and like you persevere through that local volatility, because like, you know, there's 100 different ways you can get from point A to point B. And like, if your thesis is right and it does get to point B eventually, like it might go there in a straight line. It might nuke 50% first and then go there. So like, there's a lot of different things that can happen in the interim, even if you're right, even if your thesis is correct. And I think like I had a tweet recently about like a lot of the great forecast traders, like GCR, they're high time frame. They have this like fundamental thesis that they think is going to play out, some like misvaluing in the market that they identify or some catalyst that they are able to see that other people don't. So they bet on that. And they see something that's like a high odds of happening and they size it appropriately that they can withstand it like being wrong in the short term, so long as they're right like in the long term. And they just zoom out and they're patient and they wait for their thesis to come correct. And
yep.
I mean, that doesn't, obviously that sometimes the thesis is just wrong, but like that's why you have invalidations. You need to have like, if your trade's based on a thesis, you should have a thesis based invalidation, not so much like a price based invalidation. Cause it's like, you know, if the price moves 5 or 10% against you, it doesn't necessarily mean your thesis is wrong. It just means like the market flows are causing the price to move against you.
What's
an
example
right now
of a thesis invalidation?
So like, I don't know, my Chainlink trade was thesis based, or like, let's take another trade that was like big for me was AMD, and that was like totally thesis based. And I think that one's maybe a better example because it has like a clearer invalidation. But back when AMD was $2 in like 2016 or whatever, they, again, because I follow like all the tech news, mm-hmm. I was aware of like leaked information on their upcoming architecture. Which became the Ryzen chips that they have now. So this was like before the first gen Ryzen, back when they had the Bolt, that it was called Bulldozer, was like their chips back then. But AMD sucked back then. Intel was so much better, and Intel had been better for an entire decade. So whenever you would mention to somebody like, oh, I think AMD is going to make a comeback, they would just like laugh in your face. They're like, no, they're never going to catch up to Intel, because it had been 10 years of them getting outperformed by Intel. It just seemed impossible. But this information leaked about their architecture, and it was looking like they were going to get like a 50% performance increase, which, to put that in perspective, Intel each generation gets maybe like a 5 to 10% mm-hmm. performance increase. So in this one generation, it looked like they were going to make up for an entire decade of underperforming. Mm-hmm. And they had also hired this guy, Jim Keller, who's like a kind of legendary chip architect. But that's it. Like that's the thesis of the trade. It's just AMD's going to release this chip that suddenly makes them competitive again with Intel after not being competitive for 10 years. And that causes a lot of like, that has to get priced in a lot. Like, 10 years of not being competitive was priced in. And if they become competitive overnight, like that's a huge change.
Yeah. Violent, but where
like, way. Yeah. So how you would invalidate, that's pretty easy. And that's just simply if they launch the product and it doesn't perform, and then, okay, like the information I had about the performance was wrong and I'm out. So that's like, I think that's a good example of like a fundamental invalidation versus a price invalidation.
So it didn't perform how you expected, basically.
Well, it did, but I'm saying if it hadn't, I would have exited the trade.
So let's say it didn't make that move. Let's say Okay, it had that, you know.
They said the rumors were false.
Yeah, so like they launched and it was a huge, like AMD at the time had like 1% of server market share, and now I think they have almost half of it. It was like,
oh, so you're proven right there. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so it launched that first generation chip. When it launched, it did come in at like 45% to 50% faster. If it had come in at like 20% faster or something, I would have sold everything because it wouldn't have been competitive with Intel. And it would have just been the same old story of like their business model before that was basically just like sell worse stuff, but a lot cheaper. And they weren't making much money doing that.
Got it.
Yeah, that's really good that you have the discipline to come in, though. It's like some other folks may be like, oh wait, next year is going to be the one where they really have
this is the year,
you know. So it's good to have that really strong kind of validation.
I think you hit on an important thing there, and like this may sound like an obvious statement, but I think a lot of people don't really abide by it, is it's just you want to buy before things are good. Right? Like you don't want to buy it after they release their good chip. You want to buy before they have a good chip. Because then like that's how you capture the price appreciation, obviously. But I guess it's a psychological thing, because it's really hard. Like when everything currently is very bad, it's hard to envision a future where it could be good. But that's like what you have to do. Like
that's what makes a good investor.
Yeah. Yeah, where price changes come from is from something going from good to bad or bad to good. And you have to, like, you can't let your current, what's happening currently change how you assess what the future will be.
So do you see anything? Oh, go ahead, Kit.
Oh, I just wanted to add a little color to that is I saw this pod with Crypto Messiah and Taiki, friend of the pod, shout out Taiki. And he said, like, hitting the sell button, you need to be like, you got to feel great hitting sell. But he says like, it's such a psychological barrier, because when you hit sell, it's like, you're almost giving up on the dream a little bit, you know, you've given up on that, like, you know, that 100X, that 1000Xer. And he says like, you know, you got to get that out of your mind, because probabilistically that's not going to happen. And you need to get addicted to hitting the sell button. And I felt like that is such a powerful message. Right, because it really does feel like you're kind of giving up on the dream when you hit that red button instead of the green one.
Yeah, honestly, that's something I could work on myself. That's a weak spot of mine. I'm one of those that likes to swing for the fences. Most of my trades at some point, like they have been at least in a little bit of profit. Like at some point in the lifetime of the trade, like it enters profit, I just wind up not taking it. And
same, many such cases.
Because I'm just swinging for the fences.
You know, Gammy, I would love to bring all of that lessons and hard earned experience into this cycle right now. If, you know, for the listeners at the end of this pod, as we're coming to a conclusion, like what are some of the way you're navigating the current cycle, and how do we also sell the Pico top like you did?
This is kind of my question. It's like, is there anything now that you're seeing, like, you know, before that's hot and popular?
Well, I guess some of my bags are.
Show me.
Well, I still like Link. I feel like people think I'm crazy because I'm always talking about Link, and you know, it's CT's most hated coin. But I mean, they got so much stuff coming up on the horizon. Actually, my pinned tweet right now is like kind of summarizes my Link thesis better than I would do it right now live. But basically, I mean, they're working with the largest institutions in all of America, and it's coming at a time where politicians in the US have just pivoted to pro crypto. Mm-hmm. So like, it's only gonna get better for them. Like all these companies that Link is doing pilot tests with that are like holding off on launching into production, like they're just waiting on better regulation. So now that government has flipped pro crypto, like that's, the odds of that happening just went up tremendously. So I think like, the odds that we see some major US financial institution launch a product that uses Chainlink in the next year or two, like, just went up tremendously. And yeah, so that's like the core of my Link thesis. They're going to be basically the interface for banks and other US financial institutions to interact with on-chain things. And BlackRock is pushing to do more things on-chain. Like, they have their like Buildo fund, and they're tokenizing like treasuries, and they want to tokenize more assets. Like, Larry Fink's been talking about like tokenization. They want to, like, it's a whole new asset class they can sell to people. They can just take everything that they're already selling, wrap it up in a token, and now sell it as like this whole new market. So it's like so much money that they can make. And Chainlink is going to be like the interface to all of that. Like, they just log in through CCIP, and they can connect to any chain, any product through that. And that just seems so huge to me. I have some Ondo too. Although I reduced that exposure a little bit on this like last leg up, like that breakout from 85 that I was calling. I like Prime. I think the thesis there is really simple. Like, it's a quality game, and games make like so much money. I like AR. They've got, I suggest people look into
AR. Kid loves AR. Oh my God.
I love AR.
I'm in good company here.
Yeah.
I suggest everybody look into AO Computer. That's going to be a big
thing. Oh yeah. I heard all about it.
Let me just show you back. Let me leverage show your show right now.
Go for it, man.
Dude, AO, I'm going to say now on the pod, it's like capital P primitive. It's going to be a new way that we're going to blockchain. Okay. Like, it changes the way we see a blockchain, think about a blockchain. And I just think it will completely change the game. And it shouldn't be very tribal, because you can run any VM you want on top of it. So if you want to bring your SVN, you want to bring your EVN, you want to bring your ABCDVM, whatever you want, you know, it will work.
I love it, man. Good show. But yeah, those are probably my like primary spot bags. And then, I don't know, just in and out on my trading day to day. But like, those are the stuff that I'm like holding for fundamental reasons.
Do you trade perps? Do you look at like OI, CBD funding, and all that kind of good stuff, or just a thesis, get in and wait?
That's something I'm still in the process of improving, like coming up with a more fixed like framework, and also like automating. So I need to automate more of it, and like write like. My background's in computer engineering, so I could easily write up some scripts to like scan for all this shit, but here I am still doing it manually. But like, I don't know, a lot of it, this is bad advice for people out there, but a lot of it for me, at least, I'm like very feel based. And I don't have like
vibes.
Yeah. I'm like a holistic trader, I guess. I look at a lot. And that's a pro and a con, I guess, because
everybody has their own style.
Sometimes I can get like too lost in the weeds, and there's data you don't want to be looking at. That's not like, I guess you like. I guess I see it like a polynomial equation, right? You have like factors that are different powers, and you want to find the factors with the highest power, and those are like changing day by day, because how Ethereum is going to trade into the ETF, like, I'm now looking at different things than I would if there wasn't an ETF, because like those factors are different, and also like the coefficients and the powers for the factors are different, like the weighting of, whereas normally, like, I don't know, if I saw some indicator flash, like, depending on the scenario that I'm in, I'll like view it differently. Like, oh, that's not important right now because there's some other thing that's more dominant. Mm-hmm. Or like today, I tweeted either yesterday or 2 days ago about the Chainlink Swift conference and how I thought like it's going to go down.
It's going to go down. It's going to go up.
It's been going up. It's been going up a lot. Like, people have been pricing in. They had this big news with DTCC.
Oh, yeah.
They literally all the derivatives. It's quadrillions of dollars annually. It's like ridiculous. But they did a pilot test with them. So that news was getting priced in. And also people were pumping it leading into consensus because they were having a talk with Swift. And I'm looking at it like, I've been seeing all these articles about like, oh, Chainlink's having this like announcement with Swift because like people saw the talk. I'm like, well, they've had like two or three talks with Swift before. I don't think this one's going to be a big deal. I think people are like pricing it in way too much. And so like the thesis behind that trade was purely just based on like positioning before the event and like what I think the flows will be after the event, you know? So that had there was like no indicator or anything I used for that. It's just, I noticed it's going up a lot into the event. So people are clearly positioning long into the event. And I just expected the event to be underwhelmed. Like, I don't think this is the event where they announce like some massive product with Swift, right? Mm-hmm. But like, that's how people were pricing it in. It was like ripping before the event. So I'm like, odds are this is going to be a disappointing event. And like, you see that on most like event trading. What's really important with event trading is looking at what happens before the event. Is it selling off into it? Is it pumping into it? Because that gives you an idea of like what the positioning is before the event. And that's why you see these things like on like CPI days or whatever, where you get like good news, but it sells off. But that's because everybody like already positioned long. Before it, right? And like once everybody's already bought, well, buyers are just future sellers. So the flows after the event are just like sell dominated. And again, these are just like the only thing you need to look at on the chart for to like make this assessment is literally just the price. Like, it's not, I guess volume too, because you want to have some idea of like how many people are buying, but like it's not based on any kind of indicator or anything. It's just like, yeah, how are people positioned and how do I think they're going to be positioned tomorrow or a week from now?
Yeah, no, we hear you here. I want to kind of change course a bit as we get near the end. We usually do a lightning round, but since you're such a Renaissance man, you know, with your high-end audio equipment, with the cars that you're upgrading and refurbishing, and with being the quote-unquote Bourdain of CT, I want to get into all that real quick. Like, we'll do like super quick on each, but let's talk about your passions outside of crypto and trading. High-end audio. How'd you get into that? Like, what are you listening to now? Like, what are you looking for? Like, where did the passion of that come from?
I guess before I answer that, I would just say one thing to people listening is I do think it's important to just like play and experiment and just like dabble in things, you know, and just like explore learning things and have fun with stuff. And like, that's how you wind up learning. So all these like hobbies that I have are just like, I find something I get interested in and I'm like, oh, how does this work? And I like start tearing, like, yeah, right. Or like buy some new electronic and I'm like, what's going on in here? And so I grab the screwdriver and just like tear it apart and like figure out what's going on. And I think like, one of my favorite stories of like that kind of like the benefits of that kind of living is Steve Jobs. He took a calligraphy class in college just because like he was like, oh, this seems cool, like I like calligraphy could be fun. And then it wound up giving him the idea, like Mac was the first to do changeable fonts on computers, like a thing that's like so basic now, but like they were the first to do it. And it's because he had experience with fonts from taking a calligraphy class. Like you never know how learning about one random thing like might tie into something else in your life. And I think it's just important to like be open to that experience and just try and have like stay broad a little bit before you like focus down, because you can like reach into that experience from other fields. But anyway, I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but your question was like, how did I get into audio?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess, I guess, well, my first headphone was, there's this company called Fostex, and it started off as like a modding project for me. Like I said in the beginning of the podcast, how I like would mod Xbox 360s and stuff. I like mm-hmm. modifying and like building things, but I found out there was this headphone you could get for pretty like relatively cheap. I think it was like $75 or $100 or something like that. But the thing was, the driver in the headphone was like really good, but the like housing that they put around it was like this thin plastic that made it sound bad. But you could tear it apart and fill it with like modeling clay to kind of like dampen it, and also like cotton, and you could adjust the like the bass ports on it and stuff, so you could like tweak it. There's actually this company called ZMF Headphones. The founder of that company, he started the same way. He started just by like modifying these Fostex headphones, and like he would sell them at a markup after he would like buy them for $75, mod them, and then sell them for $300 or whatever. But now he has like his own headphone business. But yeah, that's how I got it. Just started as like a tinkering project. And then where I got like really big into it was during COVID, because, you know, I'm locked in the house just trading all day.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, I listen to so much music, I may as well get a nice pair of headphones. And I tend to be one of those people that, like, when I get into something, I can't just do it like a normal person.
They gotta go 250%.
Full nut.
Yeah. So I just spend hours reading about it, and it's kind of a problem. I should be putting my time towards something more beneficial, but.
So I picked these up as well, too.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Same thing. Those I said during COVID. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go ham. And I also got like a whole amp and DAC from Firefly. Like, it just looks sick. You know?
Nice. So, yeah. Those 800s, those are good. Those are classics.
And now with cars, are you like working on or upgrading anything now? Like, what's your story with cars?
I guess I have my dad to thank for that. He's always
Papa Gammy.
He's always been into cars and motorcycles, so I grew up around it. I grew up playing Gran Turismo as a kid also. That was a big part of it. Kind of the same. It's like the same story for all of this. It's like I have an interest, and it's like, oh, I want to learn about this. So I start like tearing things apart. It's like, oh, I got a car. Well, all right, I got to like tear down the engine and see what's happening in here and just like replace all the parts. And after a while of just like, oh, I want to upgrade this. And like, eventually you find yourself at a point where like you've torn apart everything in the car and you know how every part of it works, and just kind of happens naturally like that.
And then what happened with food? Like, I'll never forget when we were in Lisbon and you cooked that delicious feast for all of us. And it was such a wholesome, homely meal, getting everybody together like that. Like, where did cooking come from, and like, what are your favorite dishes to cook?
Well, first off, that dinner in Lisbon was great. It's always nice, like, especially nice to like share your food with like friends and family, and just like, I don't know. I feel like it's one of the most pure ways to like care for somebody. You know, like you're literally providing them life. You're giving them food, sustenance to live, right? Mm-hmm. And just like, I don't know, it's so nice, right, to like put work into something and then to share it with people and then to see the smile on their face as they enjoy it. It's like, I don't know, so sad. Like, it was so nice, like standing next to the table and just seeing everybody like dive in and enjoy the food.
It was delicious too.
Oh, thanks, man. Glad you liked it. But yeah, I love cooking for people. And also, it comes back to like, it's a creative thing for me. Most like, I guess that's the big thing that's behind all of it, is just like, I like the act of creation and building, like, and, you know, funny story about me going into computer engineering. I took like a, I took a test in college that was like, what career should you be in? And they all came back like all like, it was like musician, writer, poet. It was like all these, like none of them were like engineering. And I kind of made me think for a second. I was like, well, you know, like software engineering is kind of the purest creation there is, right? You start with just a blank sheet, you write code, and you can make it do whatever you want. It's pure creation. So, and when I started to think of more of my hobbies like that, that I do find that's behind a lot of it, like the cars, that like building and tweaking it. And also I like seeing improvements. Like a car is something you can have a measurable improvement in. Like when I change something and then my lap time gets faster, it's like I actually see the impact of my work and what I've done. And that's satisfying. And I guess trading's like that too, right? Like you have a thesis, you take a trade, and you get that like instant feedback loop of like, oh no, I screwed up, or like, oh, I did really well. Good job.
Yeah, no, I see that completely. But yeah, Gammy-chan, one last question before we go. Also, I love how, even though for like most of the interview, like we were just like your life in crypto, your whole journey and everything. And for like a lot of people, like they may see like, especially if they're just following on Twitter, that may be all that is. But then like, this whole other side of you with cooking, with cars, with audio, with headphones and gear. Like, you're really just a very well-rounded human being.
Oh, well, thank you. I try.
Yeah.
How people say touch grass, like, it's a good thing. Yeah. Get out.
Yeah. Go tinker, touch grass. Yeah. One last question, and we always ask this at the end of the show. Who would you recommend as a guest? Who do you want to see on Flywheel?
Ooh. That's a tough one. So many good people in the space. Actually, a name comes to mind, Anteater.
Anteater.
Do you know him? I feel like he's had a really good come up. Out of like the people that I follow, I feel like he's grown the most. Like
Anteater. I'm not familiar. I'm slacking.
I'm part of his Telegram channel. Gammy, could you actually make an intro? I definitely appreciate that. I would love to bring him on too. He's a very interesting guy from reading all his thoughts.
Yeah, he's grown so much, and he's a good example of just like how the community in CT is so powerful. Because he's one of those guys that when he got started, he had like no fear about just cold DMing people and being like, hey, can you like help me with this? And like, what do you think about this? And he'd like just got a lot of feedback from people, and he grew so fast doing that. And like, you know, he would DM me, ask him my thoughts on something, and now like I'm asking him his thoughts on stuff. Like he's grown a lot.
Wow. Anteater. All right. Yeah. We'll take note. And Gammy, where can people find you, on Twitter and whatnot?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm just, my name's Gammy Chan, GammiChan.
Gammy Chan. Go follow. Gammy, thank you so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for sharing your story. Your highs, your lows, your comebacks, you know, it's all part of the experience. So, you know, hope to see you soon, IRL, and hope to see you on the show as well.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun to reminisce with you.
Thanks. All right. See you around.
Later.
Wow. Finishing off that episode, a real personal story, honestly, with Gammy-chan. This You're is right. The host game. I'm your host, T-Fi Dave, here with Capital K. And, you know, and for the longest time, we've had projects on, we've had, you know, people talk about what they're building, kind of, or like what they're trading, this and that. This is our first, I think, well, this is our first personal story in a while. In a while. And hearing the real human element of the ups, the downs, the flaws, the mistakes, but also the comebacks and the triumphs. It's, you know, it's a very, Gammy's story was a very real like testimony of what it's like being in crypto. It's a fucking ride. It is fucking volatile. It is emotional. As Gammy said, you got to be a little bit crazy to be in here, especially as long as he has since 2011. Since 2011.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. And I can't even imagine like the idea of cycles back then. Like almost obviously it mattered, right? Because mm-hmm. you can't just how do I say this? Like clearly money is tied to it, but there wasn't that many eyeballs. It wasn't making headlines. Like it probably didn't consume your world. So then like I wonder what it was like to be in like a bear market at that time, or like a bull market, for example.
It must have been like we thought like 2018, 2019 was dead. I can't imagine mm-hmm. like 2015 or like 2012, how like stone cold dead lights out it was in those bear markets. Gammy said he even left. He left twice.
Exactly. That's good. And dude, the craziest part is like when how did he build conviction into like Chainlink? Like, I wanted to ask him, like, was there like another one that he has like a similar level of like conviction?
I think it's just Link. Just looking at his Twitter, it's just Link. But it just happened because he learned his lesson from Bitcoin, and he was like, "All right, I'm gonna find something to go like 100%, 100 balls to the wall in." And that was Link. And then I love the part about the coincidences and everything. You know, the universe is speaking to him, conspiring in his favor, as I said. And, you know, he rode that shit up. He rode that up to 10 cents to $53.
Dude, that's so crazy. That's the fact that he bought it on Ether Delta, like he literally bought it at 10 cents. Like I told you, I saw it at 17. And I remember that very vividly, because then I remember even at that moment, like the context was like I was looking at it and news about Google Cloud was being integrated with it. And I was like, oh my God, it's one of those headlines where, you know, hey, I pay for a Google subscription and like I have a partnership with Google Cloud. And I just remember totally fading it so hard back then. That was good. But his conviction of like missing out on Bitcoin forced him to diamond hand this one. I think that's a very important lesson. That's a very, very important lesson.
And I feel like on this episode, we only really got to the tip of the iceberg with Gammy. Like I would love to have him on again and just talk about him kind of coming up on CT, you know, all the friends he's made, all the experiences he had. Cause there's like a lot there. I mean, I was with him a little bit towards the end of throughout 2022, 2023. I think that would make a really good episode in the future, kind of this, you know, the culture of CT.
I would love to bring him back on hopefully before the cycle ends, let's make a pact and bring him back on when the market is most frothy and we're just like so crazy. Okay, we got to bring Gammy on right now.
Exactly.
Let's do that.
Have like him and Peach on, maybe like a few others on, maybe Voltron. And like just talk about the culture. I think that would make a really good episode in the future. So if you guys are listening, we'd love to have you guys on.
That's cool.
Yeah. And make sure if you're listening, if you want to hear that episode in the future, you go ahead, hit that bell button. You go and subscribe right now. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Give us a like. Follow us on all of our socials at Flybo DeFi on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.